Paul, you definitely woke them up. They scored 11 seconds after the TV timeout there in the second period. What was the message there, and what was your thought on the goalie interference?
I don't know the exact words of the message. I felt that a little fire. I wasn't mad at them. Understood what they were going through. Just thought they needed some profanity in their life. I brought some. I don't excel a lot of things in life, but me, am I good at that?
Me too. Way to go, Paul. Welcome into Sabres Live. There's one thing I'm good at is knowing when to accentuate in that way. Well, rightfully or wrong. At least it was fun in defeat.
With 65-inch screen TVs and HD and 4Ks and 5Ks, you can read the lips and you can read the profanity coming out of Paul Maurice's mouth yesterday when he decided to wake up his team, which is something he had done over a year ago in a regular season game in Toronto after a goal had gone in. And while they're reviewing the goal, he's losing his mind and the goal didn't count. But then Florida ended up on a streak. They made the playoffs, went to the Stanley Cup Finals. So last night when they scored 11 seconds right after his profanity-induced rant to the team, I thought, oh boy, there he goes. Florida is going to the Stanley Cup Final again. But they
didn't
win the game.
Marty's prediction was wrong. So he has probably cursed the Panthers the rest of the way because you've been riding the Florida train hard for the last couple of games. And here we are with the series going back to Boston on Friday.
50-50 the last two games with the Florida train.
More on the NHL playoffs, which includes Edmonton's late yes, rescuing a victory against Vancouver. And we'll touch on everything on the coaching carousel, which never stops spinning with Darren Dreger of TSN at the bottom of the hour. The great Dane Smith, an MVP candidate once again in the National Lacrosse League and getting set for the NLL Finals, which begin Friday night in Albany. Come back here for game two in the best of three in Banditland on Saturday night. Dane's going to join us here in moments. But also Sabre related, we've obviously been focusing so much lately on the end of the Amherst season, the promotion of Seth Appert from Amherst head coach to Sabres assistant coach under Lindy Ruff, and the prospects which could graduate from Rochester along with their coach, Seth Appert, and the backfill that is coming that could fill in the Amherst roster and might even ascend to the Sabres roster next year. One player is going back to a very familiar spot. His name is Sevi Komarov. And he is the Quebec Defenseman of the Year. He was the top scoring defenseman in the Q. For a second straight year, he has won with his teammates the Quebec League title. Last year it was with Quebec, this year Drummondville, as they completed the sweep of Baie-Comeau last night. And Marty, on top of it, after Jason Carmano says, this kid has done a lot of winning, he ends up getting playoff MVP last night. So this big, experienced right shot defenseman is going to be joining the ranks next year. And is there any way that Komarov could muddy the waters on the blue line with the Sabres next year, somehow, some way, as a right shot D?
Okay. Well, the right shot D with Komarov and the size and the skill set and the winning and the experience and you put the package together and you're like, wow, this is very impressive. The jump from juniors to the NHL and to the pro game is a big jump. We've seen a lot of players having success at the junior level, and then it takes some time. The cliche is a forward can do it, a defenseman, a goalie takes more time. Like it goes like in tiers, but that's the cliche. We did see Benson having, jump as an 18-year-old from junior to the NHL. It can happen. I think what I'm excited to see with Komarov is development camp, prospect camp, because those are the first sign of where are you with your peers, not the 17 and 18-year-olds that are playing junior hockey, with your peers that have been drafted. And how do you dominate? That's when we saw Benson starting to dominate, starting to be like, remember when I said he looks like Claude Lemieux? He's a little pest on the ice and he's being noticed. That's when you first see it. So Komarov, that's when we've seen him at those events and being around, but That's where looking for next year. That's where I'm going to first see it. But the decor for the Sabres, the top six next year is pretty set in a way, right? And things can happen.
It's set in a way we haven't even seen before because Samuelson was not part of the mix when Byram was acquired.
Exactly. So you have Darlene Power, Byram Yokiariou, Connor Clifton, Matthias Samuelson. That's your six. And if healthy, listen, that's a great six. Okay, and I'm going to say use the word great because it's the best six that we've seen in a while here.
But based on what, though? And I'm not being a jerk. I would like draft pedigree? You no, can't it, just label somebody great when their list of accomplishments is not there.
No, I'm okay. I'm not saying like I'm just looking at it as saying individually.
I would say they have the highest potential of any.
Okay. That's
of any defense core we've ever assembled.
That's the best potential, best core, decor we've seen in a while in Buffalo, individually and as a group, right? But how does that work as a group? So it's hard to say. Okay, well, Komarov could come in and surprise everybody and fit in the top six. It's a pretty set top six with experience and players that you want there, but. Being that top six has had some injuries, especially Samuelson, over the last few years, you're going to need 8, 9, 10 defensemen at some point in the season to be able to play a role in there. And Ryan Johnson would be one that is like, okay, he could have a role in there in the top six. Komarov, okay, he could have a role in the top six. Novikov, okay, he could have a role. Like there's a group now of defensemen that will be pushing, not so much like, oh, well, it's going to be Darlene and Power and that's all we're going to run. There's a group of defensemen that are pushing, and Komarov for me is definitely a guy that I can't wait to see because I think he has all the tools.
Okay, so here's a way that Komarov could find himself with the Sabres. He excels in both July and September.
Yes.
The way you just described, and rumors come to pass. And whether these rumors are hockey insider rumors, fan-driven rumors, whatever.
You're going to go there.
No, I'm going to say that if this team, which is saying the goal has to be to get to the postseason this year, which means you have to be open to anything and everything to alter your roster for what you perceive to be the best. If you have what you see as tradable assets on the blue line, if they believe they can be better by trading Yokiariou, if they believe they can be better by trading Matthias Samuelson or insert name here, if that happens, a door may open up for someone like it unexpectedly opened for Benson last year.
Yeah.
And that's how a Komarov, based on perception, reality, whatever your belief is about this team, not you specifically, Marty, the greater your, like if you think they need to be bigger, tougher, and if Komarov again develops, like this is all, there's no right answer, but it's an interesting discussion, right? And not to mention, what did we talk about before coming on the air? Well, okay, but who's the seventh defenseman? A lot of people have written Bryson off from the organization, played pretty well when he got the minutes there at the end of the year. You could come, you could get him at whatever price as a restricted free agent that's negotiable between the player and the team. Is Bryson the perfect type of fit as a seven? Is the injured, unfortunately, after having a very strong year in Rochester, despite being on an NHL contract, but Riley Stillman, they still have the rights to. They brought him in for a reason a couple of years ago, which was physicality, and I think everybody saw that. And that could easily be nice to have as a seven. I have said and will continue to say incredible things about the growth of Jeremy Davies, who, by the way, hung around a long time at the end of training camp and preseason last year and then went on to a career year as a 27-year-old in the AHL. They have the rights to Cale Clegg. Like,
there's
it's,
room.
It's interesting, right?
Well,
it's
okay, so you mentioned There could be some movement. There could be some off-season trades. I mean, the draft is in a little bit over a month now at the beautiful Sphere in Las Vegas. It's going to be exciting. But I think this is the way I look at it. If the Sabres explore trading one of their top 6D as we look at the depth chart right now, i.e. Yokiariou, Samuelson, because I don't think – I really don't think you're going out there trading Dahlin and Power and Byram. And maybe it's Connor Clifton, but you just acquired him. Like, you just got him last year. So anyway, I think you're getting something in return on the back end, on the blue line, right? Mm. The way that I see Komarov or anybody fill in a spot unexpectedly, maybe, but because they have the skill and Komarov has the skill and, you know, the pedigree to do it, just like Benson, would be with injuries. Last year, for me, it was Matt Savoy. Matt Savoy is going to most likely start in Buffalo. Matt Savoy may get a chance to play a top six role out of training camp. And then there was the injury, which opened the door for a guy like Zach Benson. And he took his chance. And then, hey, you know, we don't have to worry about him playing 10 games. Let's see where it goes. And he kept playing himself into more time, full-time NHL player. If there's an injury on the blue line, I think that is where the door opens more for a prospect to come in, more than a trade. If you make a trade, if Buffalo makes a trade because it's playoff next year, it's because they are getting an upgrade on the blue line. That's kind of like what I see.
Yeah, I mean, I would envision if they ever did make a bold move off the blue line, it would be to improve the forward ranks. So that's why I think it's a real possibility, but again, a lot of time remains to be seen. Congratulations to Sevi Komarov on getting to the Memorial Cup, of which he scored the game-winning goal in said cup last year en route to the title.
He almost missed the team picture.
Yeah, that's
okay. He was doing a nice interview with Stefan Leroux, who's been out there, and he goes, oh, can I go? Like, basically, like, asking permission.
Like I'm trying to do to you to get to our next guest, yes.
Yeah, Matt Savoy, can I go?
Matt Savoy, by the way, got a Game 3 win last night, had another point, and his Moose Jaw Warriors, are on the cusp of a sweep in the Western League final, which would advance him to the Memorial Cup as well.
Would
the NLL finals begin.
Would we take a road trip, you and I, to Saginaw?
No.
Right? Well, why not? There's got to be music in Saginaw. You can find a concert, on the off days.
I'm going to abstain from commentary there for fear of offending the Saginaw Chamber of Commerce. The NLL starts the final this Friday in Albany. Then it's game two of this best of three back in Banditland. What a year it has been in Banditland. Saturday night, 7:30 at KeyBank. He's a two-time MVP. He's a playoff MVP and champion. And he's a finalist for this year's MVP. He is Dane Smith, and he's with us here on Sabres Live. Dane, who is the real MVP this year? You or your teammate, Josh Byrne?
I think definitely my teammate, Josh Byrne.
Really?
I think it's he deserves it. He's been a clutch player this year. He's come into his own. I've won mine. I'm happy with the amount I've won. Now I just want as many championships as possible, and I'm ready to pass the torch to my teammate, my best friend, Josh. So hopefully he can win it this year.
You're the MVP just for saying that. And you're the MVP just for saying that. You're the most valuable MVF, most valuable friend. That's the way we'll give you that award. What's it been like now getting ready for, that back-to-back championship defense and playing Albany? What's the time off and the week been like?
Yeah, it's been good to kind of recover as I've gotten older. It's important to take care of my body, try to get my mind off things. So I do golf, and I still work out quite a bit with the guys, and I try to keep my mind a little bit off lacrosse, which is weird to say, but it's coming to the week where the nerves are starting to kick in a little bit, and you don't want to think too much about the game ahead, but it's hard not to. You struggle going to sleep at night. You're always thinking of plays or things you can do, and it's one of those things that you just kind of try to enjoy the time off, but I'm ready to get back with the guys right now.
How is it different this time based on the number of trips you've made to the finals? And this is a different opponent that you've known well from the last couple of regular seasons.
Yeah. You know what? Every time we make it to the finals, you learn a little bit about yourself and the team you play for. And obviously we've been fortunate enough to make it to the finals the past 4 years. Last year, we obviously kicked the door open finally after three long years, and you kind of learn what it takes to win championship. Obviously, this year it's not going to be any different. It's going to be hard. We have a little bit of a different team from last year. They're a hungry young team that they're kind of unpredictable. And again, they've had our number this year, and we're looking forward to kind of keeping that underdog mentality and build off our success thus far.
So against Toronto, you guys had to come back down 8-4, ended up winning 10-8, like a crazy fourth quarter to get there. The game before that, the OT that lasted, my heart was about to fall out of my chest because it was like 4 minutes of nonstop back and forth action. But you guys seem to play a little bit of a different game that you did a year ago, especially like trying to finish the job and winning another championship. How has that changed for you, being that you're, you know, playing a different role in a different kind of setup, man? Is the change good, or is the change kind of like, this still feels a little weird?
Yeah, you know what? It's been, we're finding different ways to win. I know this, the beginning of the year, we were trying to find our identity. We had a lot of younger guys in and out of the lineup. We had a lot of injuries. So trying to find our way for myself personally. I've tried to be the best leader I possibly could be. I've been lucky enough, fortunate enough to be around so many great lacrosse players, but also great leaders. And for myself, it's kind of doing whatever it takes to be successful. We have so many great goal scorers around me. I've been fortunate enough to play with some of the top goal scorers ever to play. And for me, it's just kind of finding my role and adjusting to other players. And if it means kind of setting guys up, then it means setting guys up. If I need to score, I'll score. And if I need to get my teammates open, I'll try my best to do that as well. So it's just kind of, it's been a different year for sure, but it's been an exciting year as well.
I don't know if it's possible to notice a difference in Bandit Land because it has been so good for the entirety almost of the franchise's history. But attendance has gone up this year, Dane, based on last year's championship success. And it has been remarkable to see through the regular season and playoffs what it's been like. Like, can you actually feel an extra 1,000 or 1,500 or 2,000 more in the stands?
You know what? It's funny you say that because, again, like, we've had great attendance my whole career. But something feels different this year. I have no idea how. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. Like you said, there has been more people. But even the games that I think it's sold out, it's like 16, 17,000 fans, and it feels like a sold out crowd. They've been bringing the energy. It's been exciting. They've been our backbone again all year, even on road trips. It feels like home games, which is tremendous. But it's just them getting so into the game kind of helps our momentum, and we're going to need them more than ever coming down the stretch.
Dane, in the NFL, most coaches have somebody on the staff that is like pulling them back from the sideline when the line judges are running by, so they're down getting away. Like Sean McVay with the Rams, like he has somebody that always pulls him back. Who's that person on the staff or on the bench responsible to hold John Tavares back? Because every time there's a controversial call, the camera goes to him. He's losing his mind. Like, he wants to jump and fight somebody. Like, who's in charge of holding him back?
That'd be Eric Vince, Matt Vince's brother. He's our video guy. He helps along with the offense. But I recall last game, I think it was actually, I was on the ground. Some guy was wrestling me and grabbing my leg, I guess. And JT was losing his mind, and there's a video of it. I didn't realize, obviously, because I was on the floor, but I watched the game back, and he did look like he was going to jump the bench. I feel like that's the old school mentality bringing back into him, because I remember coaches like Darris Kilgore and Troy Cordley, they would always have one foot on the bench, and it's an exciting part. He's so into the game, but sometimes, yeah, we definitely have to tell him that, hey, calm down a little bit. But it's hard to tell one of the greatest players to ever do it to calm down.
So there's more than one Vince having a hand in all of this success. It's just that one gets more attention than the other. Can you believe yet again what we are seeing from Matt Vince?
You know what? It almost never gets old. I know he took a lot of heat at the beginning of the year. A lot of people were on him about he should be retired, all this stuff. And it's it was never a doubt that he would be as successful as he is this year. I feel like he's plays bigger and bigger games. And again, I saw a stat again, 9 of 18 or whatever it may be, championships to years in the league. And that's just outstanding. But he's weathered the storm. He's been so important to us offensively because we get more opportunities to kind of get in a rhythm, but also defensively when guys make mistakes, he's back there to kind of pick it up. So whether it be overtime, the fourth quarter, he seems to play bigger.
So I know you guys had Razor on the pod, right, with Josh. So when I got to Buffalo and I was playing with Dominik Hasek, Rob Ree used to always yell out, guys, if you want to work on your confidence, shoot on Marty. Stay away from the Dominator. He stops everything at the other end. But Marty lets it in. So in practice, when you guys do shoot around, do you like the challenge to try to score on Matt Vince? Or do you go at the other end and work on your confidence and try to score more goals?
It's kind of weird that you say that. I don't know how it works in the NHL, but our offensive guys, we go down and shoot, but we don't shoot on Vino. He takes shots from the defensive guys, which to me seems weird, but I mean, he's the best for a reason, so I have to respect it. We shoot on our backup goalie, who's unbelievable as well, and our third string goalie that's probably 6'7", 300 pounds, and he's very hard to score on as well. So, yeah, it's a crazy thing, and I feel like not many people know about that, but I guess it makes him better.
Dane, the biggest reason I, you know, as a lifelong lacrosse enthusiast, the biggest reason I mentioned the increase attendance in Bannetland is we all share the love and hope of the game growing, right? Especially here where you've had so much success as a franchise and multiple trips to the finals. Are you feeling it individually as far as media attention, opportunities to share stories about the game, like from when you had your first championship appearance in your career to now? Like, do you feel like, hey, maybe we are gaining even more traction here with you being, you know, a star of the league?
Yeah, you know what? It's definitely taken the right step forward, which is amazing. Obviously, not every place is like Bannetland, unfortunately, but to see it grow, even in Buffalo, it's awesome to see. And you're seeing each league, each team, kind of do it a little bit better. So we're definitely going in the right direction. Obviously, there's a lot of press around the Bandits right now, which is amazing to see because it actually makes us feel like we're professional athletes. It's kind of weird to say, but it's so much different. And it's really cool to be a part of because I feel like we do get treated like the best.
Okay. Dane. Oh, you got one more, Marty?
I got one more. I hated playing in Albany. The lighting was dark. The building like was bleh. Like I hated Albany back in the AHL days when they were the River Rats too. Like it made it look like we were going down the gutters to play a hockey game against the River Rats. Like it was brutal. But is the building different? Like for the sight lines, for the way the ball bounces, for the lighting. Like does that adjust how you guys play and how you feel about the game?
Not all too much. I mean, it's not the most ideal trip, I'd say. You have to bus there. There's no direct flights or anything like that. We don't get private jets or anything like that. So the bus ride isn't that ideal, but they're going through the same stuff as us. So at the end of the day, I know our fans will travel well, and we'll have Bannetland rocking in Albany. So I'm looking forward to the challenge ahead, and it's going to be an exciting series.
Everybody should bring a flashlight to brighten up the place a little bit.
Yeah.
Dane, thank you as always, and best of luck in the NLL finals.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
There is Dane Smith. What a weekend it's going to be because it is a quick turnaround. It's game one in Albany on Friday, it's game two in Bannetland on Saturday, and the tickets are running short. So scan the QR code on the screen right now on MSG or go to bandits.com and make sure that Bannetland is filled to capacity. When the Bandits have an opportunity, potentially they grab game one on the road. They could have it in front of their home fans for a second straight year. And wouldn't that be something, Marty? It has been just an amazing journey this year for a team that really hit a rough spot in the middle portion of the 18 game regular season. And yet here they are, and they are up against a dynamic young offensive Albany team. The series begins on Friday. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, next here on Sabres Live.
with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It's time for more from the coaching carousel. There's only one person we trust to discuss that. His name is Darren Dreger, hockey insider from TSN. Hi, Dregs. How are you?
I'm good. I wish I got paid by the question related to where's Craig Berube going to land? What about Todd McClellan?
You know, how many interviews? How many of you? How many segments have you done across the, you know, the continent today talking about this very subject?
Yeah, three to be exact. Uh-huh. But I can tell you this, in fairness to the whole process, it's as bizarre as anything I've experienced in the coaching world in 25 plus years. You know, normally it's not as public as this, right? I mean, you don't often, you know, have teams or media doing play-by-play of a situation or a scenario as it plays out. And that's exactly what's going on here with the Maple Leafs and with the New Jersey Devils and with the Winnipeg Jets. But it does feel like it's reaching conclusion on a couple of fronts. So let's start with New Jersey. Information I got this morning was that Tom Fitzgerald is hoping that he can make his decision in the next 48 hours. The problem he has is, okay, well, who are you deciding on here? You know, Sheldon Keefe still hasn't made it clear to the New Jersey Devils that he wants to sit out for a while and recharge, or conversely, he's willing to jump right back into the heat. And if that's the case, well, then Tom Fitzgerald's got to make a call here. You know, is Sheldon Keefe the front runner? Is it Todd McClellan? Is Craig Berube still available? Jay Woodcroft, my understanding is, was impressive in the interview with Fitzgerald and the New Jersey Devils. But Fitzy just wants to, again, have a level playing field in making that call on who the right fit is. And it feels like Brad Treliving and the Toronto Maple Leafs are inching towards, you know, trying to get something done with Craig Berube. As we have this conversation just past noon here on Wednesday, I don't believe they've officially made an offer, but it's certainly trending in that area. And then, as was reported, I guess yesterday, maybe Monday, my days are running into each other here, but the Winnipeg Jets had a virtual interview with Craig Berube. And I think that was Kevin Cheveldayoff just, again, taking advantage of the process. It's not going to be nearly as expansive in Winnipeg as it's been in Toronto, or certainly the way it's been in New Jersey. They know they've got a good coach in waiting there in Scott Arneil, but Chevy wanted to have the conversation at least and get to know Craig Berube a little bit. But I know that there's also a sit-down meeting with Scott Arneil today at some point in Winnipeg. And, you know, I'm sure they'll push him on, if given the head coaching assignment, you know, what direction does he see taking this club? So that's about the biggest update I can provide at this point at 12:33 p.m. Eastern here on Wednesday.
Dregs, as I look on Cap Friendly, because they do have the coaches' salaries on there of those that are known, right? Those that are made public. And you have Pete DeBoer at over $4 million with Dallas. Paul Maurice is just under $4 million. You've got Peter Laviolette, almost $5 million. Torts is $4 million. Bruce Cassidy is $4.5 million. Are we thinking that Craig Berube and, you know, Sheldon Keefe are going to be at the $4.5 million, $5 million? Is that what they want? Or are they looking at, hey, I'm getting paid anyway. I just got fired. I can take a little bit off to find the right fit.
Yeah, and if it is the right fit, maybe they're willing to do that. And you know, you get creative in that negotiation. Then you tack on a couple of years. You know, if we're talking about Sheldon Keefe, he has a two-year contract extension, which was provided by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So he doesn't need to be in a rush. And I believe he's at $2.75 million for next year and then $3 million the year after. So, you know, if it's New Jersey, he's going to get a bump in pay, no doubt about that. You know, Sheldon Keefe proven enough that he's a $4 million plus coach? I'm not so sure. I guess it just depends on, you know, how eager Tom Fitzgerald is to try and get that thing solidified. If, again, Sheldon decides that he's willing to come back in. Berube is a different beast for me, though, right? I mean, this guy is a proven Stanley Cup champion. And it's not just that the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup. It's how they won the Stanley Cup. That team was dead and buried at the midpoint of the year. And nobody gave up. And he found a way to pool it all together, right? So I think the coaching gets a lot more credit, at least in my mind, when you've had a longer term to turn things around as they did in St. Louis. So he's got to be north of four, pushing 4.5. And the one thing that the Toronto Maple Leafs have in abundance is resources and money. So it's not going to be a financial decision for the Leafs.
Anything new on Pittsburgh?
Now, other than what we continue to read, and Duffer, I think you've seen the same thing. Every time I reach out to good sources in Pittsburgh, it's always about just derailing the speculation.
Yeah.
And then now things are great between Kyle Dubas and Mike Sullivan. So I actually stopped checking about a week, 10 days ago, and then there was a story, was it in the Gazette? I can't remember. Maybe The Athletic, where it was written. But they basically came out and said, no, the relationship between coach and general manager is rock solid here. It's just when Todd Reirden got let go, I think that fueled more of the speculation just based on the history between Todd Reirden and Mike Sullivan and people trying to connect the dots a little bit more. But hey, if you're New Jersey, and again, we're going back now several days and speculating, and you know the connection between Fitzgerald and Mike Sullivan, you can't wait any longer. You've got to move forward and get a deal done here.
The one thing that is true with the Pittsburgh situation is they have undergone ownership change in the last couple of years and recently dismissed a number of people organizationally on the business side. So there has been a lot of movement within the organization, which leads to more conversations and or speculation. Yeah. So those are just things that, you know, that are that are real. Whether they impact this actual position, we shall see. Nothing else wildly new on the West Coast teams as far as Seattle and San Jose are concerned?
No. Well, look, I mean, if you want to start with Seattle, there's no surprise that there's almost nothing that comes out of there. That's by design with Ron Francis, the general manager. I mean, he's not playing the game that maybe some of the other clubs are okay with playing. And, you know, he's not going to announce the carousel of interviews that, you know, he continues to work with. I still have time. And Marty, you and I talked about this a little bit last night. I still have time for at least the theory, the possibility that if the Carolina Hurricanes are going to lose to the New York Rangers, that Tom Dundon, the owner of the Hurricanes, does something drastic yet again and pulls the agreement. It's not just an offer anymore. He pulled the offer a couple of weeks back, and then they reengaged when that went public, and there was a sense that Brendan Moore was at least willing to consider the open market. Okay, the negotiation's back on. They hammer out an agreement, and then they park it so that Don Waddell can look after the assistant coaches and the support staff of the Carolina Hurricanes. But I also know that Dundon, and why would he be pleased with the start in that series against the Rangers, right? I was told that he was borderline livid. So if they lose, even though they've made a series out of it to this point, you know, does that provoke him to do something which would be borderline ridiculous and yet again pull that offer? So if you're Ron Francis with the history that he has with Brendan Moore, do you at least wait? Maybe you've got a plan A or a plan B already in mind that you know isn't going anywhere. So what's the rush? So that's one of those wild theories that I still have time for until the agreement gets signed and it becomes a binding contract.
What about San Jose? And I'm only saying it because, well, Chicago picked Connor Bedard last year. So then it was like, oh, Chicago would be a really good spot to coach, right? It's the Blackhawks and they got Connor Bedard and they've got good young players and, you know, it's Luke Richardson there now, but, you know, San Jose, they're going to draft Macklin Celebrini, but it doesn't feel like San Jose is, people are jumping at the, I want a coach there. Like, what's happening with Mike Greer and the San Jose Sharks and their search for a coach?
Yeah, pretty quiet. And I'm not going to lie. I was surprised that they dusted David Quinn. I really was. I don't think that was fair. I mean, given the team that Dave Quinn thought he was going to have and the evolution of the organization, I mean, that all went sideways, you know, with a deal here or there. And the next thing you know, he's got pieces left and, you know, turned out to be an abysmal season for the San Jose Sharks, other than the purpose and the goal was to get in a position to get first pick overall, which they now have. I don't have this on authority. I'm not connecting the dots, but, you know, I mentioned Jay Woodcroft and I know how impressed the Devils management group was in talking to him. I wouldn't be surprised if there's been some communication connection in San Jose. And if that's the case, that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, Woodcroft is a very cerebral coach. He is. And with all due respect to his coaching resume, I feel like he still has a lot more to learn. And maybe developmentally, he'd be a good fit in a start-over situation like that. So I don't know if there's a fit there at all. It's been pretty quiet coming out of San Jose, but that does make some sense.
Yeah, well, he has a lengthy history in San Jose, having spent a half dozen years there with McClellan as an assistant. So, I wonder a lot about McClellan. I was intrigued to see that Anaheim made a little news behind their bench. Obviously, Greg Cronin is the head guy, but Craig Johnson, Sabre defenseman Ryan Johnson's dad, and Newell Brown, they are not being renewed as assistants. Tage Thompson's dad, Brent, is staying on there. So, you know, there might be still opportunity to add a little bit more. But again, these are things that you almost always see when a new regime comes in, right?
Always.
Contracts eventually expire and they bring in quote unquote their people. So just, it was more of a Sabres nugget for our audience.
No, I get it.
So,
but you know what, Duffer, I don't think we talk enough about that sort of support role kind of level, right? Mm-hmm. Because, hey, Newell Brown and Craig Johnson are good coaches. Mm-hmm. But I have time for Pat Verbeek and the Anaheim Ducks doing it as early as they've done it, because now that affords these men, you know, the chance to hook up somewhere else. And given their level of experience, I know Newell Brown a little bit. I know him better than I know Craig Johnson, and he's just an all-around good coach. So if you put him in the right situation, I mean, he's been coaching for so long, there's going to be a fit. Now, just a follow-up quickly to this, because I was interested to hear. So we're all waiting what's going to happen with the Columbus Blue Jackets and what John Davidson and Mike Priest are going to do with the general manager. We know that Marc Bergevin, who's employed by the Los Angeles Kings, has had some form of interview already in Columbus, either in person or virtual, doesn't matter, semantics. So that's a name that makes sense, but there's also some heavy hitters that could be in play there, right? Like Kenny Holland. What about Donnie Waddell? We talked about the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, but I've heard that the Columbus Blue Jackets basically have told their scouting department, and that could be just pro, could be both pro and amateur, you guys have our permission to speak to any club you want. And that's just a recognition of, again, to your point, Brian, of the new regime coming in. And these guys are probably on expiring contracts anyway. Normally, the standard management scout contract takes you to the end of June. But this is just giving those individuals a head start. And I would appreciate that if I was in that spot, because now 100%. You're free to make the calls without getting into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Regs, have you ever visited the Situation Room?
I have, yeah.
Okay. I haven't yet, and I want to do it every year. I'm like, I want to take a night, because they will open the door. They'll say, any media members want to come and see the Situation Room? Now, I hate when people say, well, they call Toronto. It doesn't matter where the Situation Room is. It could be in Toronto. It could be in the North Pole. It could be in South America. It doesn't matter. It's the Situation Room where they review everything. It's not Toronto.
I'll visit when it's in a tropical location. Thank you.
With good music, concert venues around. Not Saginaw, for those listening earlier in the show. So now we've got two calls. We had the Sam Bennett cross-check on Charlie Coyle that resulted in the 2-2 goal that Florida came back and won in game four. And we got the goalie interference on Sergei Bobrovsky yesterday, Danton Heinen, and then it was a good goal. I think they got it wrong on the Charlie Coyle Sam Bennett issue, but I think they got it right yesterday. What do you see and from the Situation Rooms and the people in there when there's these debatable and very, very controversial calls that happen, especially in the playoffs?
Yeah, and it's almost always around goaltender interference, right? It just it almost always is, because there's differing opinions on it. I have the luxury. And now in the playoffs, the National Hockey League normally will offer a response, either a statement or a video, just quickly explaining why they made the determination that they did. They almost never want to overrule the call on the ice unless it is undeniably wrong, right? And the officials always want to get it right as well. I can appreciate, you know, why there was some level of angst and the want to put those two situations together in the same series. But the explanation that, you know, you kind of gave me last night, frankly, was that Sergei Bobrovsky had time to reset. He did. And it feels like that was enough. The other one earlier in the series with Bennett, I still don't think by definition of the rule that that goal should have counted. You know, I mean, he at least shoved Charlie Coyle into Swayman. You know,
too strong.
Maybe, yeah. But I mean, again, if you read the rule,
I know
it literally doesn't make mention of if a player should be stiffer or not.
It's only because Marty makes this joke like 10 times through the course of the year, so I have to reiterate
too strong.
It
again. Too strong. One thing, but just to wrap up on this, for any media member, the analysts are different. Marty, you got an opinion. It's based on your play, your experience, and the fact that you understand the rule book, right? But for the average NHL media person, you can actually find the information by touching base with the Situation Room. They will communicate. They will educate. They will tell you what they saw. You don't have to agree with it, but at least base your opinion on the fact. And it always, look, I don't, it's not my job to defend the National Hockey League Department of Player Safety or Situation Room, but I know the level of access I have to those people. And at least I want to get that part of the story right.
Yeah. Well, three cheers for Marty being a stickler for the rule book, because honestly, it is one of the greatest resources we have on our broadcast for the Sabres games and on a daily basis. Like, Marty, thank you, because we appreciate your attention to detail on that.
Well, you get two things with me. You get the rule book and a few stories, but last night, Dreger and I were in the nice little watching room at the TSN studios for the Oilers Canucks game, and Jamie McLennan, Noodles, he was telling stories. So good thing it didn't go to overtime, but we got great stories out of Noodles.
Noodles, here's an old story, an old saying: Jamie McLennan could talk a pit bull off a meat wagon. And by the way, there's a third thing with you there, Marty. Don't undersell yourself. It's those beautiful blue eyes. That's the third thing you've got going for you.
It's very true.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Actually,
it would have been tired. It would have been tired if Evan Bouchard wouldn't have scored with 40 seconds left last night. We don't cheer for teams to win, but we cheer for games not to go to OT. No. That's for sure.
Agreed.
All right. You guys take a nap. We'll be back after this to wrap up Sabres Live. Darren, thanks as always.
Have a great weekend.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Well, there's definitely one player in our one person in our realm here on Sabres Live that pulls off double duty like no other, and that is Chief Amateur Scout Daniel Armbruster, who's also the lead singer of Joywave, you know, out of Rochester. And we've had him on the podcast in consecutive years, and he has deftly predicted which Sabre is going to be picked in the first round. Anyway, great news for Joywave fans. Their current album is out, Permanent Pleasure, but also the tour begins in Toronto September 11th at the Phoenix, and they will make their way to Buffalo on October the 18th. Now, you had a question for me?
Yes,
is that right?
I have a question for you regarding the games last night. Obviously, Boston Bruins won game 5, so now it goes back to Boston for game 6 against the Florida Panthers. The Edmonton Oilers win a close one towards the end. But my question to you is, I don't know if you've looked at the shots at the end of the game, but how many shots did the Vancouver Canucks had in the game yesterday against
Less
the Edmonton Oilers? They did have exactly their average. They had 21. Oh. And that's only because they pulled a goalie at the end of the game and got another like 4 shots or 5 shots in the last 3 minutes. Pulled their goalie, scored. Oilers scored. Pulled their goalie, get another 2-3 shots. They were at 16 with 3.5, 4 minutes left in the game.
Hence, we need 5 or 6 guys to get going here. The words from head coach Rick Tocchet. And I think it's fair Fair to assume that our audience knows exactly which five or six guys Talkit is talking about. More action tonight, and we'll do this all again tomorrow. See you then.
Kidley shoved Charlie Coyle into Swayman. You know,
too strong.
Maybe, yeah. But I mean, again, if you read the rule,
it doesn't make mention of if a player should be stiffer or not.
It's only because Marty makes this joke like 10 times through the course of the year, so I have to reiterate
too strong.
It again. Too strong.
One thing, but just to wrap up on this, for any media member, the analysts are different. Marty, you got an opinion. It's based on your play, your experience, and the fact that you understand the rule book, right? But for the average NHL media person, you can actually find the information by touching base with the Situation Room. They will communicate. They will educate. They will tell you what they saw. You don't have to agree with it, but at least base your opinion on the fact. And it always, look, I don't, it's not my job to defend the National Hockey League Department of Player Safety or Situation Room, but I know the level of access I have to those people. And at least I want to get that part of the story right.
Yeah. Well, three cheers for Marty being a stickler for the rule book, because honestly, it is one of the greatest resources we have on our broadcast for the Sabres games and on a daily basis. Like, Marty, thank you, because we appreciate your attention to detail on that.
Well, you get two things with me. You get the rule book and a few stories, but last night, Dreger and I were in the nice little watching room at the TSN studios for the Oilers Canucks game, and Jamie McLennan, Noodles, he was telling stories. So good thing it didn't go to overtime, but we got great stories out of Noodles.
Noodles, here's an old story, an old saying: Jamie McLennan could talk a pit bull off a meat wagon. And by the way, there's a third thing with you there, Marty. Don't undersell yourself. It's those beautiful blue eyes. That's the third thing you've got going for you.
It's very true.
I appreciate very it. True. Thank you. Thank you.
Actually,
it would have been tired. It would have been tired if Evan Bouchard wouldn't have scored with 40 seconds left last night. We don't cheer for teams to win, but we cheer for games not to go to OT. Yeah. That's for sure.
Agreed.
All right. You guys take a nap. We'll be back after this to wrap up Sabres Live. Darren, thanks as always.
Have a great weekend.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Well, there's definitely one player in our, one person in our realm here on Sabres Live that pulls off double duty like no other, and that is Chief Amateur Scout Daniel Armbruster, who's also the lead singer of Joywave, you know, out of Rochester. And we've had him on the podcast in consecutive years, and he has deftly predicted which Sabre is going to be picked in the first round. Anyway, great news for Joywave fans. Their current album is out, Permanent Pleasure, but also the tour begins in Toronto September 11th at the Phoenix, and they will make their way to Buffalo on October the 18th. Now, you had a question for me?
Yes,
is that right?
I have a question for you regarding the games last night. Obviously, Boston Bruins won game 5, so now it goes back to Boston for game 6 against the Florida Panthers. The Edmonton Oilers win a close one towards the end, but my question to you is, I don't know if you've looked at the shots at the end of the game, but how many shots did the Vancouver Canucks had in the game yesterday against
Less
the Edmonton Oilers? They did have exactly their average. They had 21. Oh. And that's only because they pulled a goalie at the end of the game and got another like 4 shots or 5 shots in the last 3 minutes. Pulled their goalie, scored. Oilers scored. Pulled their goalie, get another 2-3 shots. They were at 16 with 3.5-4 minutes left in the game.
Hence, we need 5 or 6 guys to get going here. The words from head coach Rick Tocchet. And I think it's fair. Fair to assume that our audience knows exactly which 5 or 6 guys Talkit is talking about. More action tonight, and we'll do this all again tomorrow. See you then.